Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmade, and on this week's archive edition, we watch a play for power after a dictator unexpectedly kicks the bucket in Armando Iannucci's absurdist drama, The Death of Stalin.
What is this lust for power? It's a very fascinating thing, isn't it? Lust for other things. Power is the most mysterious, isn't it? I have not a word said against Armando. I think he's just... Well, I think he's a genius, really. His eye and his ear is absolutely impeccable.
The Death of Stalin is a satire about the days before the funeral of the leader of the Soviet Union in 1953. This film is by Emmy Award-winning and Oscar-nominated writer-director Armando Iannucci, creator of The Thick of It, Veep, and previous to this, the director of In the Loop. The film's star-studded cast includes Jason Isaacs, Rupert Friend, Andrea Riseborough, Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor and Michael Palin, all of whom fight to control the country after Stalin's death.
Our actual general secretary is lying in a puddle of indignity. I mean, I think he's saying, get me a doctor now.
No, I don't agree. I think we should wait until we're quartered.
Quartered? The room is only 75% conscious.
Are you wearing pajamas?
Yes, so...
Why?
Because I act, Lavrenti, decisively and with great speed.
I said you'd be tested, and right now you're being tested by a shouting man wearing pyjamas.
Simon Russell Beale plays Beria, the head of the secret police. He joined me to discuss this dark, funny, if historically truthful film.
Okay, so at the start of the film, Joseph Stalin is about to kick the bucket. There is a vacuum of power, and Beria seems very keen to fill it.
I should say, yes. Stalin is all based on fact, as you know. And Armando is quite strict about all that. And the only thing that's changed is the sort of time scale. He's sort of squashed together. Anyway, Stalin famously had this massive stroke. So he was left in lying on the floor in his room. And then the first person, I think, to go in other than the housekeeper was Beria. Yeah, he was brave enough to go in.
And then they all argue about getting doctors.
And then they argue about getting doctors. Well, Stalin had killed a lot of doctors, of course, just before the famous doctor's plot. And so, I mean, yes, so they had to get doctors. And Khrushchev, who, of course, ended up being the next head of state, I think was quite a junior member of the Politburo. So you had Malenkov, who was now the new head of state, and you had Beria, who was very senior. And this pipsqueak called Khrushchev, who wins.
You've had an incredible career, but you haven't done as much in film.
No, I haven't. I've done a bit, but no, not a lot. I don't know, it's passed me by, really. So this is a new venture for me.
And how was that different? I mean, how did you... I think there was some similarities in the sense that Armando was very intense in the sort of rehearsal process.
Well, oddly, talking to people about the film, they say it's quite theatrical, which I hadn't really thought about it, but I suppose it is. And they're quite long scenes, aren't they? And they're quite verbal scenes. And I suppose that's what Armando plays with also in The Thick of It and Veep. And we had 2 weeks rehearsal beforehand, which, of course, for me is great because I have gone on set and thought I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea what they want. So to be able to talk about it for 2 weeks beforehand is great. He sort of used improvisation, not a lot of improvisation, but he used a bit to change the script all the time. So we never were quite certain what we were going to say to him on the day.
And that was a challenge for you. I think you said that before. Improvisation was something you haven't done.
Yes. I mean, To be perfectly honest, I think Amanda recognised that, and he was very, very kind. He didn't force me to do it, because there were some very, very expert improvisers there, like Steve and Jeffrey. And I think in the end, probably I didn't improvise very much. What he used to do, Amanda, was to do a scene and get it in the can and sort of have it set and covered and all the rest of it. And then he would say, let's just do a version, you know, just for fun, and see what comes out. And the first time we did that, actually, nothing changed. It's quite interesting. and we all went, sorry, Amanda, nothing changed. He said, no, that's not the point. It's just an easier piece of acting, really.
Shoot her before him, but make sure he sees it. Or in this one, kill him, take him to his church, dump him in the pulpit. And I'll leave the rest up to you.
You may hate me for making this comparison, but you've obviously done a lot of Shakespeare. But I would argue that Armando and his co-writers, they're pretty incredible wordsmiths.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, talking about the co-writers, of course, Shakespeare was a great co-writer, as we now know. And Armando, look, I have not a word said against Armando. I think he's just, well, I think he's a genius, really. Yeah. And his eye and his ear is absolutely impeccable. Mm. This is why I'm slightly wary about using the word improvisation, because he would never let his own ear allow something to slip. He would never just say, oh, that's just improvised. No, it was all very precise by the time it got onto the screen.
I know this is part of your trade already, but I believe in comedy it's all about the beats and the pauses and letting, I don't know, how would you talk about that?
Well, I think it's different on film and on or perhaps I'm wrong, in theatre. In theatre, you're in charge of the beats, aren't you, as an actor? And what I find completely and utterly puzzling is watching great comic actors on film. I don't know how they do it. And let's face it, my part in this is not very funny. You see the great comic actors, and I don't know how they do it, because I don't know how they can judge it without a live audience there, but they do. And I presume a lot of it is to do with their own rhythm and their own timing, but a lot of it, of course, will be to do with the editing. So in film, it's a slightly different process. I think you just have to trust playing as truthfully as possible and hope that they'll edit it so that it's comic.
That's interesting, isn't it? That the editing, I suppose, in a comedy, though this isn't necessarily a comedy, but it is comedic, it is important.
It was the first thing, the very first bit of filming I ever did of any sort of substance, was a thing called Dance the Music of Time for television. It was a big part, and I remember the first scene I did, and we did the first sort of run of it, and the director just took, he said, can I have a word? And he took me off, and he said, you don't have to be in charge of the pace of this scene. Because that will be done by the editor and by me and whoever. In other words, you don't have to jump in on cue. You say your line when you feel ready to say it, and don't feel obliged to think of it like a play. And it was a big lesson, that. And you'll see actors on, you know, they take their time on film sets and they're ready and they'll say it. And they know that it can be tightened up and it can be made more comic or whatever. But that's not the actor's responsibility on a film set.
And where the cameras are? Again, I'm asking you very basic questions.
Now, that's interesting. I was just talking about the fact that I felt I need to learn more of the craft of it, yes. And I don't know whether the best thing, I'd have to ask other actors about this, whether the best thing is to ignore it and just, you know, do what you do and you'll be caught on camera somehow. Or whether you should be aware of, I don't know what the best best system is, really. But I did, you know, about 2 years ago, I sat down and I thought I needed to know about film as a, well, not only watching famous films, which I, a lot of which I've never seen, like The Godfather I've never seen, you know, but also about the craft of it. So I bought lots of books. I bought a history of film, a couple of history of films, and I bought a book, which I still can't quite understand, about lenses and, you know, focal distances and whatever. But I tried, wow. Because I think, yeah, you should really. Know about that.
This is a blatant attempt by Comrade Beria to buy the support of the public.
I thought you were in favour of a more liberal approach, Comrade Reformer.
All those in favour of pausing the arrests, of pausing the executions.
An incredible, beyond incredible ensemble cast. Again, sort of maybe getting into the minutiae a little bit, but what's it like bouncing off some of those those comedians, those actors?
Oh, look, I mean, what do you do when you're facing Jeffrey and Steve? You know? It's
give it your best.
Give it, just try a bit harder. They're amazing. And that was partly to do with this 2 weeks rehearsal, which I have to say was invaluable for me. But partly that was to do with the confidence thing, you know. You know, Steve's such a generous man. And I think we had the luck to all, by the end of that 2 weeks, certainly, to know that what our function was within the group. So nobody was playing against another person, do you know what I mean? We all had a set, you know, and I knew mine was the sort of serious, evil, horrible person. But, you know, Jeffrey was doing his thing and Steve was doing his thing. So Jason was doing his thing, so, you know. Very early on, Amanda said, you know, this is a black comedy, but the seriousness of their situation and the seriousness of the history is too big to ignore. So I think, you know, these were people responsible for a lot of unhappiness and pain and death.
There are no Russian accents, which...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I knew he wouldn't want a Russian accent. I mean, I sort of knew that. He never said it. What I think is more unusual is the fact he didn't want any of us to change any of our accents. Because I said, you know, Stalin and Beria are both from Georgia. Shouldn't they be the sort of same? And I remember I started trying to speak with them. Accents are not my strong point. Started trying to speak with a sort of London accent because Adrian, who was playing Stalin, had a London accent. And I thought, well, I better, you know, see if I can do a sort of London accent. But Amanda wasn't interested in that at all. And that I think, because of course I'm completely used to it. So those guys just are Malenkov and Khrushchev, even if they're speaking with an American accent. I don't know what it does to the sort of, whether it distances the audience or whether it makes them not, I don't know.
I think for me, it just made me allowed me to laugh more.
Yeah, that may be the case. It also means that we can, a little bit more relaxed. I don't think anybody, unless an accent genius, finds it easy to play comedy in a different accent. I think that might be rather hard.
Your character does go through a transformation in the film. You know, you are maybe more black and white evil at the start, but it's, you kind of become someone that we maybe, I don't know, admire is the wrong word, someone that we have a little bit of sympathy for.
That's interesting. They're all very, very, very frightened, aren't they? They're all very frightened. And, you know, he must have been frightened along with the rest of them that he was going to end up, as he does, you know, being killed. And that's interesting you say that. I mean, I hadn't really thought about that, but I suppose these people aren't just all... Yeah, they suffer fear just as much as anybody else, you know. And I think it's interesting that thing about his liberal reforms too. At the moment when he goes, I'm going to institute liberal reforms, and of course Khrushchev says, you know, they were just doing that for political reasons. I don't know what he's about. I mean, I suspect they probably were political reasons, but you know, there's a bit of you thinking, isn't that interesting? The irony of this man who is so foul suddenly going, actually, I'm going to release all the prisoners. It's odd. I mean, it's odd.
So I'll outline the releases under Article 31.
Shall I? Yes, please. Please, understand that this is not some cynical ploy. I mean, these reforms are correct reforms.
Totally understood. Are you wearing a corset?
It's a girdle. I have a bad back. It's functional, it's not cosmetic.
You wear it well.
Let's make this a test of your discretion, shall we?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool. You know, what is this lust for power? It's a very fascinating thing, isn't it?
Mm.
Lust for other things. Power is the most mysterious, isn't it?
Mm.
Riches, sex, beauty. Power, such a weird one to want. And you think, isn't that, you know, Stalin didn't live in, I mean, comparative to a lot of people in his country, he lived in luxury, but he didn't, you know, have, you know, fancy yachts and just power, pure power.
You just mentioned him in passing, but Michael Palin as Molotov, it was so nice to see him on the big screen again.
I know, well, he is the nicest man you'll ever meet. Along with, it's rather boring, this, along with the rest of the cast, we had a, you know, he's just so lovely. I've just spent the morning with him doing interviews, and he's great. But they all were.
Did you crack up a few times on set?
Well, we're talking about this at lunch. No. Weirdly. I don't remember, and I was saying to Andrea, did we laugh in scenes? She said, no, we didn't, did we? We laughed before, but I don't think we laughed actually when we were filming at all. I don't know why. Perhaps it's because it's just too dark a subject. I don't know. And it'd be interesting to know whether they laughed in, you know, the thick of it and Veep. They probably didn't, you know. They probably were just so focused on getting this comedy right. But we didn't, no.
We've talked about before with Armando, but on set, what kind of direction does he give?
Very quiet. Never raises his voice to us at all. Very... very eagle-eyed, very kind to me, actually. He was very kind. He understood, I think, where my weaknesses were, and he wasn't going to allow that to... And, of course, also, he started gearing, I think, he said this, but he started gearing his writing to the characters he was seeing, you know.
Mm.
Suddenly we were aware that lines, there were Simon lines, and there were Michael lines, and there were Steve lines, you know. And that's quite interesting to watch somebody just watching. And, of course, he was changing the thing the whole time, all the time.
Mm.
So every day we'd get a new script.
Wow.
I learned the whole script in one go before we started, like a play, rather naively. And he laughed at me about that. And I said, well, no, it's just because, you know, it makes me feel safe. And I always think, well, whatever happens, I can at least get on set and do the lines in the right order, a bit like a play. And he said, well, we're not, you know, every day there's going to be changes. And indeed there were. So,
even though it's in Russia, it was shot in London, I believe. Could you talk a little bit about the filming itself?
Near Slough, actually, most of it. There's a big... Is it a pine forest? There's a big forest where they built Stalin's statue. And I think Michael said that's where they did bits of the Holy Grail, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So... that was where the rest of it, yeah, odd places like the Masons Hall, and then they did a bit in Kiev, I think. But none of the actors went out. Well, one actor called Paul Reddy, he went out to Kiev, and he got a holiday. And the rest of us, yeah, it was mostly London and Slough. It's funny, isn't it?
I read recently that Russia, some reports from Russia that they think this is not very funny.
Yes, I'm sad about that. I mean, we'll see what happens. I think they're still in negotiation about showing it, so I don't know quite where they're at. It's a shame because I think it's in a rather grand tradition of Soviet humour, actually, apart from anything else. So it's part of that culture, and also, I think it's quite a serious film underneath. I think the last beat is not funny at all when it gets to a sort of climax of. And also, there's a rather moving bit when all the whole of Russia comes to pay their respects to Stalin's body, and that's not funny. So I think it's a more layered film than that reaction would allow, and I think it's a shame.
Ask Beria if he invited the bishops.
Don't give me orders. Ask Beria if he invited the bishops.
Did you invite the bishops?
Yes.
Yes.
Well?
He said yes.
I'm going to give everyone in Red Square a voucher permitting one kick each to his stupid face.
Is he asking for some delicious hay?
No, he said something quite complicated about a voucher system.
And sort of taking it maybe broader, the time that we live in now politically. Sorry, I have to. It's the question you get asked every time, I expect.
Power struggles, power struggles. They don't go away. And, you know, we made this film 2 years ago and the world has was it a year ago? I can't remember. Anyway, some time ago. Certainly I remember voting in the referendum during filming, so it was before that. Yeah, and power struggles the world over at all periods of history are sort of the same, aren't they? And it's interesting that that's what Armando really is interested in, isn't it? That it's not about policy. It's not even about Stalin, this film, partly because he dies. And it's not about what he did, except for instill this terrible fear. And he's interested in power politics, really.
I wondered at this point in your career whether you were enjoying playing some more unusual characters. I really enjoyed you in Penny Dreadful. And obviously this is quite an unusual choice as well. I mean, are you looking for those roles?
Well, it's sort of, I don't know whether it's what people are sort of asking me to do, really. I mean, I don't think, unfortunately, I've got the face and the figure to do. I mean, I'd love to do the sort of, you know, the emotional carrier of a film. Mm. I have done on stage many times, of course, but it's slightly different on stage. But I don't think I'm that sort of filmic actor, really. So I suppose, you know, I'm what they used to call a character actor, aren't I? So Ferdinand Lyle, who I absolutely adore doing, you know, ridiculous accent. Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing I'm going to be asked to do. And also, I think Shakespeare's probably going to fade away a bit, partly because of my age, and the other parts aren't.
King Lear's waiting for you.
Well, no, I've done King Lear. I did King Lear 2 years ago. So, and I did Prospero. Just finished doing Prospero. So I've done the old ones now. But I was sitting on a sofa I'm doing Vanity Fair at the moment, a version of Vanity Fair. I'm playing Mr. Sedley. Mrs. Sedley is played by Claire Skinner, who's played Desdemona when I did Iago, an old friend of mine. And we were sitting on the sofa, and she said, "Oh my God, you do realise this is our first grandparent role." So, old characters are now going to be my thing, I suppose.
Well, I mean, to cheer you up a little bit, I think there are some great roles in film and television now. I mean, maybe, you know, especially in the States, you know. So you don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah, no, I don't know what's around the corner. And I have sort of decided to open myself a little bit to new experiences, of which this has been, I have to say, you know, as you can tell, a complete pleasure. So if they're all like this, that's fine by me. They won't be, of course, but, you know, if they're as pleasurable as this.
I wanted to... I felt it's a miss not to mention the Barbican. You were in The Tempest recently there. A good experience?
Oh, it was wonderful. God, I'm sounding like Pollyanna in this interview, aren't I? I have had some bad... No, Tempest was absolutely wonderful, and it's a play that I've always thought was rather cold, and I was wrong, and I found it emotionally very satisfying. And of course, there was lots of sort of, you know, fancy stuff going on with the computer stuff, which was fascinating. Although, oddly enough, I had very little to do with that. That was all Ariel. So poor old thing, he was spending hours being poked and whatever to make it work. But I just sort of floated around in a sort of cloud of unknowing, just sort of, you know, I'll just do what I do, straight out to the audience. No, but I had a wonderful time. And the Barbican's an old, you know, haunt of mine, isn't it? I've been there for 8 years with the RSC, so I know it well.
How's the speech?
My father was a warm and mighty bear, and we are his 170 million orphaned cubs, Russian cubs, Georgian cubs, Armenian cubs, Lithuanian...
I'll leave you to it.
Thanks to Simon for speaking to me. An extraordinary film that manages to be shocking and sorrowful, yet at times laugh out loud funny. Quite an achievement. I'm Ben Eshmaid. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. We're here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds and theme series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.